guessing about more time. The normal procedure has been to have the minister and the DG speak to us for about half an hour, and then we take questions and discussions, and then we conclude shortly before 3 o'clock. You got the program? This year, of course, we got the minister in the presidency here because they provide the mandate paper which sets our government's priorities within which the budget is shaped. So I'll hand over to the other chairs if they've got anything to say. Comrade Chop.
Thank you, co-chair. We also recognize our provincial legislators and representatives, chairs of the Portfolio Committee on Finance. We had MECs yesterday also present at the lock-up session and in the gallery during the tabling. So those members, welcome at this meeting. Take the documents back to your legislators. We will be doing those briefings on the Wednesday, the 15th of November, in the morning and the afternoon, conduct public hearings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, then. So this is a change to the program. Minister Jeff Khadebe contacted me to say that he is going to go and give an Oliver Tambo lecture and unfortunately has to leave before the meeting ends. Now, I think given that it's Oliver Tambo, no one minister will dare raise an objection, not even the leader of the DA here, I imagine. So I think that's fine. So there's a slight change to the program. We will, in fact, start with the minister, and instead of going into the Minister of Finance, and we also have Deputy Minister Sifiso Buthelezi, welcome. The DG is here, and the team from National Treasury and other officials are here. So basically, we're going to take questions. Can we please settle down? Tasneem, your friends there, what are they doing, and why can't it be done outside the meeting? All right, fine. My friend, whoever you are, can you sit down, please? My friend, can you sit down, please? Right. Can we get started? You're not going to be allowed to speak, eh? Right. So can we get going, please? We're running out of time. Okay. So here it is. The minister from the presidency will now speak. There's just one comment from me. I just want to say that, you know, things are somewhat bleak. But we're not dead. All of us are here. The skies haven't fallen down, okay? Let's remember that. Thank you very much before we throw hyperboles in. The rules allow the chairperson, in terms of Rule 144, sub 2, Roman numeral 3, subsection 4, Roman numeral 2, to stop people making hyperbolic, the big word, what it means is extreme exaggerations, catastrophe, civil war, and so on. Those words are ruled out. Thank you very much. Okay, over to you, Comrade Jeff.
Thanks, Comrade Yunus, and your co-chairs. We are glad that we have been invited to this joint meeting of the Standing and Select Committees of Finance and Appropriations. It's not the first time we come before the Committee of Parliament to talk about the mandate paper. We're here on the 7th of September. Mrs. Posa was chairing that meeting. So many colleagues that I see around here are familiar with the issues. But because I have been requested to present, so I'll be as thorough as I can possibly. The presentation has been circulated. It will be dealing with the following issues to clarify what the mandate paper is and the approach that was taken in developing it. We're also going to be outlining the principles and the criteria for the priorities of the mandate paper as an instrument for funding the goals of the National Development Plan. And also, we're going to be giving more details on the outlines and the process of utilization of the mandate paper throughout government, and also the process of prioritization, as well as the list of those priorities that were approved by Cabinet in August of 2017. As it is common knowledge that our government, including Parliament, adopted the NDP in 2012 as a blueprint and an overarching vision for 2030. And in 2014, Cabinet adopted the medium-term strategic framework 2014-2019 as the first five-year term to implement the National Development Plan. The implementation of the NDP is a key government imperative under the current administration, and also it is aligned with our agenda, Africa Agenda 2063, as well as the Sustainable Development Goals of 2030, of which South Africa via States SA will play a very key and pivotal role. Most importantly, the task of a developmental state is to grow the economy, strengthen the capabilities of the state, and build the capabilities and capacities of all South Africans. In July 2016, Cabinet took a formal decision on the mandate paper to strengthen the alignment of budget to the plan, that is the NDP, as well as this first five-year plan that I've indicated, the medium-term strategic framework, through this annual mandate paper prior to the start of the budget process that guides the priorities. And what are the origins of the mandate paper? The mandate paper is a brainchild of the National Planning Commission in their advisory role to the President and the government to facilitate better alignment of the ND priorities and budget. It is a strategic framework for decision making on the priorities of the budget to advance the goals of the NDP and deal with the basic challenges of poverty, inequality and unemployment, as well as providing a rational and systematic basis for optimizing key strategic choices according to the criteria that has been identified. As I've indicated, at the Cabinet of 2016, to be specific, in July-August 2016, a decision was taken to establish this process of the mandate paper that is led by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation prior to and to guide the detailed allocation process that is led by National Treasury in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And that the mandate paper must be released in time so that it can be used by all spheres of government to align to the key objectives of our country. The next slide is a schematic presentation of this framework of planning, starting with the NDP. As I've indicated, it was adopted in 2012 for 2030, which is largely led by the first National Planning Commission, as well as the current one. And then, as I've said, in 2014, the medium-term strategic framework was adopted by Cabinet, which is largely driven by DPME. And then there's a 9-point plan to reignite growth, which the President in the State of the Nation Address in 2015 outlined, which is led by the economic cluster, and as well as this mandate paper, as I've indicated. Then we have the MTBS and the MTF for 2018 budget, which is led by National Treasury, and those are some of the cluster programs of government. The process of the mandating of the budget process. It contains three elements. Firstly, from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, of clarifying and refining the priorities that need to be funded to ensure that government's NDP objectives are realized and reached. And also, the role of National Treasury, as we all know, is on the fiscal framework determining how much government can spend in total and how its financing will be split between taxes, revenues, fee revenues and borrowing. And also a lot of functional groups led by treasury clusters that propose and get approval for detailed allocation for departments and programs budget. And also that departments need to align to NDP and priorities as they prepare their individual budget submissions to National Treasury to ensure that they're aligned with the NDP. The mandate paper therefore supports government in this process of developing of this fiscal framework and fiscal strategy. The decision, though, on the fiscal framework depends on the detailed microeconomic projections as well as the analysis of the impact that the Minister of Finance does from time to time. The process of developing this mandate paper for 2018. As I've indicated, the mandate paper process is initiated in the prior year for budget preparation. Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation starts this consultation with States SA on the socio-economic assessment, including economic indicators, poverty data, youth unemployment, which is included in some of the slides in this presentation. The DPME also engages with National Treasury functional groups in terms of their treasury clusters to assess the performance of departments and identify successes, failures, as well as challenges, which was done in January of this year. DPME also uses the MTSF outcome facilitators on monitoring and evaluation results and also the midterm review to further refine analysis of performance of programs and interventions to speed up service delivery, which was done in March 2017. The National Planning Commission developed the NDP levers, which is contained in the slides, and framework for priorities on the mandate paper, which was finalized by June of 2017. And DPME presented this framework to the FOSAD workshop, which is the forum for South African Directors General, to get their inputs on the mandate paper and priorities. Those meetings happened in July. I think there were about two or three of those kinds of meetings. Then the DPME presented the mandate paper, firstly to the Cabinet Lekhutla on the 3rd of August 2017, not 2007, sorry for the mistake, to get inputs on further refinement of those priorities and also interacting with all cluster coordinating directors general. DPME also amended the paper on the basis of the inputs that were made, and the mandate paper was then formally adopted by Cabinet on the 16th of August 2017. The next slide indicates the levers that were developed by the NPC, namely strong and inclusive economic capabilities of South Africans and capable states, and those are areas of prioritization. Those that do not need further funding that is covered in the MTSF midterm report, as well as those priority spending that needs urgent support. As I've indicated, the process of the budget is priority setting, which is very essential planning task of the mandate paper, and budget allocations are set at the domain of the National Treasury in terms of the PFMA. The budget process includes medium-term expenditure committee comprising of National Treasury, DPSA, DPME and COCTA, receiving and providing inputs to departments that are organized in functional groups as part of the budget proposals. The MTEC structure, how it works at the moment, there are several presentations that are done, including presentation of the mandate paper by DPME, as well as from National Treasury on fiscal framework, as well as the budget proposal by those functional groups that I mentioned earlier. The MTEC then also makes recommendations to the Minister's Committee on the Budget, and the Minister of Finance outlines the medium-term budget policy statement as it did yesterday, and also refer to this mandate paper as part of the impact on policy framework for the budget, which will be presented in February of 2018. I thought I should also indicate that this is not a peculiar process, because since the dawn of democracy, there has been many reforms on the budget process. Since 1998 in particular, government implemented much lauded budget reforms to increase political oversight, to adjust allocations to the objectives of our new democracy. Important objectives of budget reform, especially in the late 1990s, was to ensure this political oversight and to ensure functional alignment and efficiency. The budget process is therefore a broader inclusive process than solely the domain of National Treasury alone, and the reforms over the years has established the following. The MTEC functional groups, consisting of several departments organized in National Treasury clusters, which jointly prepare budget proposals that are aligned to functional areas. The Medium-Term Expenditure Committee of Directors General, coordinating between National Treasury and other central departments, the Minister's Committee on the Budget, as well as now the mandate paper that is prepared by the DPME jointly and in consultation, as I've indicated earlier, on States SA, National Treasury, Functional Groups, National Planning Commission, FOSAD, which is the forum for South African Directors General, including provincial DGs, as well as Cabinet Lekgotla, and finally to be approved by Cabinet. What does the future looks like? We believe that the mandate paper for 2018 must be reinforced further in a number of ways as we prepare for budget 2019, that it must be aligned with the planning, monitoring and reporting cycles and released by 30 of April 2018 to ensure that it informs even the budget proposals by government departments, provinces, as well as local authorities. And that the mandate paper must be embedded as a tool in the planning cycle through legislation to institutionalize national planning, monitoring and evaluation, including regulations, practice notes and directives for execution. The development of overarching framework for budget 2019 will also require extensive, all-inclusive stakeholder consultations broader than we have done right now. And also that provinces and local government also need to highlight the real pressures and the potential crises that face them, and that a prioritization must continue to be based on assessment of the outcomes and implementation, performance and focus, population growth shifts, and all the other socio-economic trends. And also the link between DPME and States SA in a collaborating role in enhancing planning. And also too, as I've indicated, that the prioritizing framework will in the future include clear legal institutional base for enforceability, transparent and formal consultations, including public consultation. Approach to these priorities. The next slide indicates the socio-economic implications of economic slowdown, the poverty drivers. As we can see there, unemployment is at the top, the years of schooling, and it goes down till child mortality. The next slides also include the impact of unemployment to young people. That graph indicates the levels of unemployment amongst young people, especially between the ages of 15 and 34. The broad outline of the midterm review, we just picked up some few issues just to indicate the context and the approach that has been taken in developing the mandate paper. On the basic education, which is on the upward trend, the enrollment in post-school education and training, which has increased, improvement in the health status of South Africans and the provision of basic services, and also the sustained and improved provision of social assistance to over 17 million South Africans. But of course, as the Minister of Finance indicated yesterday, the big challenge remains the economy, the growth in GDP, the investment in science and technology innovation, and responding to the challenges of the fourth industrial revolution. The criteria and principles. The 2018 priorities largely must be funded through the internal reprioritization process by government departments, and this prioritization must support initiatives for youth, women and children, small business and informal sector, and also must factor in environmental considerations, and also must give also consideration to be given to the high risk environments such as the higher education challenges that we face, public transport, land reforms. And in terms of the criteria, one of the criteria is to deal with the non-core and non-performing programs, the limitation of the usage of consultants by capping their expenditure, and the strict limits on contingency liabilities and litigation cost. optimization of state procurement, improving the returns and value for money for the state infrastructure projects to incentivize good governance and penalize lapses. Most of these issues were addressed very eloquently by my cabinet colleague yesterday. On efficiencies and savings, and also to explore alternative funding for revenue generation. Integration of priorities. The integrated list of priorities incorporates the midterm review, as I've indicated, of the MTSF, the engagements at a Foresight workshop for several times, deliberations that were held by cabinet, both in the Lekgotla as well as the final cabinet, and the work that's being done by cluster coordinating DGs, and the approval by cabinet of budget 2018, and the budget process through the MTEC recommendations, MINCOM BAND, MTBPS, and finally next day, the MTF budget. And cabinet Lekgotla's deliberations emphasize that the priorities identified must advance the implementation of the NDP, have positive impact on jobs, on vulnerable groups, transformation and empowerment, especially of SMMEs, cooperatives, townships and rural economies and black business. So those are the areas that we prioritize for the 2018 focus, job creation and small business development, 30% set aside localization amongst others, youth development, the issue of upscaling labor-intensive programs, internships, artisans and learnerships, infrastructure spending including its maintenance on broadband and water infrastructure, the regional integration and development in advancing our national interest in SADC, in BRICS as well as in the Indian Ocean Rim Association, land reform and agricultural development, the fast-tracking of restitution settlement and redistribution, support for SMMEs and cooperatives, the comprehensive social protection, education and skills, the issues around HIV and AIDS, NHI, expansion of early childhood development, the issues around free education for the poor, expansion of the student accommodation, as well as an integrated plan to fight crime, which includes, amongst others, the combating of violent protests, integrated criminal justice system and the national identification system, fighting corruption and finalization of border management and deployment. So the summary of these priorities as approved by Cabinet, there are seven. Firstly, job creation and small business development. Number two, youth development. Three, infrastructure expansion and maintenance. Four, land reform, smallholder farmer and agriculture development. Five, comprehensive social security, education and skills. Six, integrated plan to fight crime. And lastly, advancing the national interest in SADC, African continent, BRICS and the Indian Ocean Rim. As I've indicated, the mandate paper was considered by Cabinet on the 16th of August 2017. And the paper sets out those priorities we approved for guiding the budget process towards budget 2018. It was also approved that the next mandate paper should be finalized by the 30th of April 2018 to guide the preparation of budgets for May to July. Ngiyabonga, 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 ngiyabonga. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Over to members. Who would speak? Let's just see how many members want to speak and then we can decide how much of time. Mr. Mania, Mr. Lees, Tandi, Pinky, Imam. Right, that's it. Five. I think about 3 minutes each because we have to monitor. Six, Belinda. We have to monitor because, firstly, the main, if I understand correctly, although we now have two ministers here, the first minister is providing the framework. Our main concern is the budget. So because the minister is coming for the first time from the presidency, we allowed some latitude for time. But please, can we stick by the time? So everybody, including the chair, will stick to 3 minutes, right? And I'll monitor myself as well. So let's start with you, Mr. Mania. Here it is, you're being monitored. 3 minutes, no more. Thank you.
thank you, Chair, and thank you to the minister for his presentation. I wonder if he could just confirm that the document that he handed out is the mandate paper to which he was referring. And if that is true, why then on the 17th of October 2017 did his office deny me access to a copy of the mandate paper on the basis that the document was a classified cabinet record? So that's the first question. The second question is, just in terms of the process which you outlined, in your letter there is a worrisome clue where you say that the budget planning process, or you indicate that the budget planning process is a work in progress and that we can expect the introduction of legislation. And the fear here, of course, is that the legislation would legislate or a different budget prioritization process, which would essentially, to put it frankly, make you the de facto prime minister and the budget czar at the expense of the minister, who would effectively be reduced to a bookkeeper. That's the fear. And ultimately, of course, it would result in the defanging of national treasury.
Thank you very much. Who's next? Mr. Lees.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Minister, thank you for being with us for the first time. I just want a comment from you. Minister Gigaba has a, you know, he's a calm, collected, rational presenter and it's been my experience. But yesterday he seemed a little bit nervous, and President Zuma didn't seem to be terribly happy either. I was wondering whether this had anything to do with the inability of Cabinet to make some really difficult decisions, particularly with regard to tax rates and so on.
Thank you. Tande, 3 minutes, please.
Microphone is off. Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. Had you been here 2 days ago, you would have heard my comment that I made to the Budget Office about how I view, in my personal view, that it was irrelevant as to where the budget prioritization lies. Because I said, to me, it's not about how many structures you have and where they are. Primarily, it's how you implement it. And given the fact that I've seen how, in my previous life, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation has struggled to get people to account properly, As an optimist, I hold a view that I hope the mandate paper will make people to be even more focused, because history told us that at some point there was no alignment of the budget and the priorities. So we take it for granted that in this context it will achieve that. But I'm interested to know, in terms of the public consultation, if we look at other economies, you have civil society structures playing oversight over the executive in terms of budgetary process. Be it the Australian model, be it the Canadian model, or any other, you'll find a solid structure of economies who will say to government, let's plan together, let's evaluate and monitor whether you stick to the targets and the outcomes that you have targeted for yourself. So I want to know, is this the type of forum that you're trying to establish when you said there will be public consultation, so that there's clarity in terms of what you said? The other issue is on mobilization of funding beyond revenue. I'm not saying expand on the methodologies, but what are the target lines? Because that's the gist of the matter. It can be done, but what are the target lines, and how can we be able to attain it, so that as we do it, we're not seen to be feeding into, for argument's sake, the SOEs that has performed so badly and keep on giving them funds when they doesn't necessarily deserve to be given continuous funding. So I want you to clarify that so that the perception doesn't lie around that the intention is to come on, David, you had nothing to say earlier. He has nothing to say, Chair, so he needs to wait.
Close to 3 minutes. There's 4 committees here, so we have to abide by the time. Yeah.
And lastly, in terms of institutionalization of planning, I want to know what's going to be the difference between how the MINCOMBAT has been doing it and how the mandate paper will try to achieve that. What is the distinction between that process and this process? Thanks.
Thank you.
Who's next? There was number 4, Pinky.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I think the presentation by the Minister shows how government is trying to integrate all the plans that you have, your NDP or Agenda 2063, SDGs and so on. But I also hope that even the report from StatsSA from time to time, government also looks at things that are lifted there and they are able to take them on board in terms of planning. My challenge, Chair, is whether through the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, we are able to follow through these plans and make sure that they translate into actual government programs. Because if you look at some of the departments, I'm not sure whether some of the priorities that are being identified get actually translated into programs. But over and above that, if you look at this adjusted estimates of national expenditure, you get so worried that even things that are prioritized along the 7 priorities that they are talking about, money is declared unspent, even in those areas. Whether infrastructure, whether jobs fund, whether you end up government not implementing on things that can be able to intervene given the challenges that we are facing. We're not saying the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation must be cracking the whip or being a big brother, but it's important that you are able to identify the red lights even before, or orange in a department before it becomes red, so that you don't come back and find yourself on a back foot when we were supposed to be dealing with some of these things that could really mitigate on the challenges that you are faced with. And I'm not sure, Chair, whether the challenge is that it's poor planning, or is it poor planning, or is it the incapacity of the state to implement some of these things? Because plans are there, but implementation is something else. So it's one of the things that...
You're at 3 minutes, Pinky. You can round up in the next 20 seconds or something.
Okay. The last thing, Chair, is that in the 7 priorities, do SOEs also, are they on board in terms of how they should also contribute towards those 7 priorities? Because it's also important for them to really assist in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Majima.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister, for that presentation. And I think, like my colleague said, my concern is, yes, the plans are very, very good. The ideas are very, very good. But we've had these plans, many plans, in fact, for many years. And like the Minister yesterday alluded to the fact that one of the major concerns we have and challenges is the implementation. But more importantly from the implementation is consequences. And I'm quite satisfied and convinced that if I have to ask for the number of people that have faced consequences for non-compliance in terms of ensuring they were implementing to ensure, to check whether they had the necessary capacity, you'll find that it's minimal. And that seems to be a major, major problem in the country. I don't believe our problems in the country are major. I think what we really need is the world to be able to correct the mistakes of the past and try to...
Do you want to suggest some concrete
proposals? Yes, I'm coming there.
No, my brother. You know what, we say this thing for 23 years. Have you got any concrete proposals? Addressing it to members in general. Let's not repeat what we said.
What can
we do about no consequences? What's
right.
the proposal?
In fact, it's exactly what we said in the Parliamentary Management Finance Committee last night. First of all, give us the names of those people who have been failing us repeatedly, because otherwise it comes into the one door and out to the other, so that we can also, as oversight committees, ensure that there is consequences for these people, number one. And the other thing is, if I'm going to give you another example now. If we talk about the seven priorities, in order to achieve this, we need to look all around us. And I'm going to give you a good example. We've had a challenge, we're talking about it, like the South African Airways. And I think we now have putting in some measures to correct it. But yet I can assure you that almost 90% of government don't fly South African Airways. Now, how are we going to do something about it to prioritize, to ensure that we put our resources there? Because we're making the money and we are now spending it on actually the your opposition, and you're expecting SAA to succeed. Why can't we now reprioritize and ensure that that resources is spent on organizations which belong to the state? That's the other thing. You know, we take the issue of NSFAS. Now, we have a serious problem in the country in terms of higher education, which we want to deal with. But you can see that only 10% of the people in this country pay back that thing. I mean, I've come back from Germany and find they have an almost 100% payback. Now, we cannot say that of that 90% that are not paying, that for the last 10 years, all those 90% people are still unemployed. It's not possible. Now we need to ensure that SARS, together with the employers, come on board to be able to ensure so that we can get this and put more into higher education. That is how we'd be able to address that one. We're talking about the serious challenges about crime, and yes, we have a serious problem with crime. Can we deal with crime in isolation? My opinion is it's not. We need to look at the socio-economic conditions under which the people live. And if you take the Cape Flats for that example, if you look at the issue...
No, you're at 3 minutes.
If you look at the issue of housing, health, whatever it is, unless we address those collectively, my concern is that we're not going to be able to win and create that as a safer environment. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you so much, Belinda.
Thanks very much. This doesn't really look to me like focus areas. If you look on page 19, there's seven so-called focus areas, under each of which there's eight or more sub-areas. So in the end, you've got 56 focus areas. So what I'm not sure what sort of guidance that really gives to... I mean, so everything is there. There isn't anything major, I don't think, that's not there. But that does raise the question of the quality of this plan. And if it's based on the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation's work, when they came to our committee to tell us what was going on in higher education, we were very disappointed, because actually we knew far more about what was going on in higher education than they did. And this is revealed when you talk about higher education in the plan. You mention it four times. One, you say it's a high risk. Two, you say you've got to sort out TVETs in another place. Three, you say the numbers are up, which actually they aren't. They've stagnated over the past 2 years. And four, you say we must expand accommodation, but only at universities, not at TVETs. So this does not accord with the way in which the department is thinking, as far as I'm aware. So I'm just wondering whether the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation is the right place for really knowing what goes on in departments. My sense is that it's not. Thank you.
Can I just raise a few quick things? One is, Minister, as far as I know, both ministers actually, maybe Minister Kakaba wants to respond later, planning must come first before budgeting. So what the presidency is now doing should have been done actually in 1994. I think prime ministers or presidents or ministers in their offices should actually do the overall planning. Because there's no super minister. In fact, the super minister came about, as many of us will argue, through financialization of the economy, through globalization. We suddenly, ministers of finance became super ministers. And they could decide for other ministers. It caused a lot of tension. So you needed somebody, if you like, above them. Moreover, priorities for government are finally spearheaded by a president. So having this in the presidency, minister, as far as I'm concerned, is long overdue. In fact, it's not particularly new. COSATU first raised it in 1996 with the introduction of GIA. They felt that should have been dealt with by Madiba, the President Mandela and so on at that stage, so it's nothing new. Secondly, we do have in the municipal legislation the integrated development plan, which comes first, then comes the budget. The IDP is the five-year, if you like, MTSF. So it is in legislation. And Minister, I'm very impressed, I must say, that you are thinking about legislation in this regard. Why should we have it in the provincial, local government sphere and not in the provincial and national? What's crucially important, we're not sure what your legislation will ultimately have to say, but, you know, if it's talking about cooperative governance across all three spheres, we would like municipalities, provincial and national government to work within the NDP. So the only way you can do that is to have some sort of legislation because make it compulsory. In response to Mr. Mania for now, I want to point out that ultimately Parliament will decide on this legislation. Right? Parliament will decide on the legislation, so you don't need to get heated up about what the minister is suggesting. Then on the issue Tandi raised, I don't know what this means, but on slide 12 you talk about transparent and formal consultations and public participation. As far as I can tell, for now, that's excellent. We should all encourage that. That you don't come here with a budget, Minister Kikava, without due consultation to the public. This is what we've been asking for, many of us in the ANC. In fact, before 1994, this was what our struggles about. So I want to say that on the surface, at least, what is happening here is correct. Now, I know that people legitimately have concerns about the current president, but we must separate that from the issue. I know, I read what people say in the media and hear them, and the argument is, this is being done simply to push through the president's pet projects, nuclear and so on. Ultimately, it's about Parliament. Nothing can be done by the executive outside of Parliament's agreement. And even if they do things outside the PFMA, they'll be hauled before this Parliament. So ultimately, we must exercise our oversight role effectively. Comrades, do you want to add anything on this issue? Comrade Minister, as far as I can see, this is overdue. It's very welcome. And please move fast on it.
Thanks, Chairperson, and all the other six colleagues who commented and asked questions on this one. Firstly, my friend David Menier, maybe, from the NCACC. Well, it is correct, the mandate paper has been distributed to yourselves today. Maybe it was the exuberant enthusiasm of a public official. On the issue of legislation, yes, it is our intention to have legislation not only to deal with this one, but to deal with this whole issue of institutionalizing planning within the system of government. So the mandate paper will be incorporated in that direction. My colleague next to me has nothing to fear, because this is a collective cabinet decision of how the mandate paper has to intersect with the whole budget process that is led by him. So there is no contradiction whatsoever. On the issues of taxes, they are normally not dealt with in the medium-term budget policy statement, but my colleague will respond to those issues at an appropriate time. This mandate paper is actually forcing government departments to focus on the real issues that our country must be able to deal with. That's correct, Pinky. Secondly, the issue of public consultation, we believe that as we mature in dealing with the mandate paper, we should also involve our people, because it's part of the NDP goals to have an active citizenry, that this participatory democracy must involve our people. SOCs, of course, they are public entities that report to government. They are also bound by this mandate paper. On the issue of DPME following up on these plans, DPME, as we all know, is a new department in government if one takes into account that it was only in 2009 that Department of Planning, at the time, Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, and the Minister for National Planning Commission It's only in 2014 that it has been combined, called planning, monitoring, and evaluation. We are trying our best to ensure that we assist in the implementation of the National Development Plan. And part of what we do in terms of these red lights, orange, every quarter DPME provides information to Cabinet on the assessment of the performance of government departments in the implementation of NDP, as well as the medium-term strategic framework, all those 14 outcomes, starting with basic education. We believe that we know exceedingly well what is happening in basic education, as well as higher education and training. Every quarter, we do those assessments, and the results are posted in our website, which are readily available even to members of parliament to assist, to assess how far we are going, where challenges are, and what plans are there to improve the performance of government. All those 14 outcomes, get into our website, we'll find them. On the issues of consequent management, I think that arises from that as well, that ministers, executive authorities are expected to sign performance agreements with their DGs. If there's no performance, there has to be consequences. But also Parliament has a very important role to oversight and monitor the executive that they perform. So you also have a responsibility and duty to hold us to account. SAA, I fly South African Airways. I know my colleagues also fly South African Airways. Even when I go abroad, I fly South African Airways, as I went to the UN in September with the South African Airways. On the issue of higher education, it is a priority. That is why, since this intervention of the mandate paper by the National Planning Commission, we have seen a good rise of expenditure by higher education and training. If one takes into account that in 2016 there was a budget cut across the board, but the only exceptions were the Department of Higher Education and Training, Small Business Development, as well as DPME, indicating the importance that our government attaches to the issue of education in general, as well as higher education and training in particular. Thanks, Chairperson, on the issue of legislation. As I've said, we're forging ahead. About 3 weeks ago, my Director General, Mpumi Mbofu, has held a meeting with all government planners in all spheres of government, including local government, to start the process of having this legislation. There is a draft bill that will soon be coming to Parliament for your deliberations. We are very serious about the issue of institutionalizing planning in the system of government that will also include this issue of the mandate paper, as I've indicated. So that's where I can leave it at the moment, and thanks for your
Thank you, Minister. I know you have
support.
To leave. I wish you well. Over to Minister Kikava on the second item. You meant to give a political overview of the budget. We've heard you, we've seen you on TV, and I'm sure you are very tired of repeating what you said. So if there's any convention by your predecessors, they spoke for 5 or 10 minutes, and they usually said something very new in those 10 minutes, so we'll test you on that. But I know they shouldn't say, and the DG takes over. But I see here, colleagues, you'll remember, for those of you here for the first time, is we don't want a lengthy, elaborate presentation. We got it yesterday in the House, and we had a flood of comments in the media, and we've heard you, Minister, millions of times. So we leave it to you. You've got up to half an hour. You don't have to use the whole half an hour, and then we take questions. Right, over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I think, as you correctly say, and good morning, Chairpersons of the other committees and honorable members. As you correctly say, we have presented elaborately on the MTBPS and basically gave a frank overview and of the economic and fiscal outlook in the country, in order to present before the nation the real challenges that we are facing, and to say much of what we need to do in order to uplift the economy remains within our hands. We need to do the right things to increase the pace and scale of reforms, to be decisive in the actions that we need to take in. One of the questions which have been asked has been whether we are detracting from the path of fiscal consolidation. And the answer is clearly no. And that we need to be concerned as South Africans that whereas both the global outlook as well as the sub-Saharan outlook are positive, that the South African economy's performance remains subdued, trailing behind the growth curve that's being experienced both in sub-Saharan Africa and globally. We need to address the reasons why there is such, why our economy is performing in that way, and ensure that we lift the business confidence, the investor confidence, and address the challenges that we are facing. I think what the statement we presented yesterday tried to say is that the times are tough, but we've got to be tougher than them, to be bold and get ourselves out of the present situation, because if things don't change, then we will find our debt escalating, the deficit escalating, and we will find ourselves unable to instill confidence that we are capable of managing our finances as well as we should, and of managing our economy as well as we should. But Chair, I think that's what I want to say. We had the unenviable task of opening the government's books and carrying a somber and very candid message, and so if we did not do that, we would have been disingenuous and I guess that is sufficient. It suffices for the DG to then proceed with the presentation and get into the details of the budget policy statement. Thank you.
Quickly, an in-house matter. Both houses, people are exempt from attending the house until 3 o'clock, right? So that's not an issue. And secondly, the PBO sent me a message, the two finance committees, if we can submit to them by this afternoon or by 10 o'clock tomorrow, at the very latest, areas or themes we think they should focus on for their input next week. Tumasani, you happy with that? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, honourable members. We have distributed the presentation, and Minister kind of summarized what it is, but I'll just repeat one or two key issues and take members through the presentation. And I also want to believe...
15, 20 minutes be fine.
Yes.
Okay, good.
More
thank
than
you.
Enough. Thank you very much. I also want to believe that members also have the document, the actual medium-term budget policy. So, yes. So I think as Minister indicated, the core messages are reflected in the slide that these are difficult times for us. We had to we need to make tough decisions, and we said we are committed to making them, and that, you know, in making these tough decisions, we can not do it alone, but we need everyone. We need Parliament, we need South Africans to rally around, we need business, we need labour and everyone. And it is important that radical economic social transformation is required in order to include South Africa, South Africans as a whole. And we also believe in the MTOs that we presented yesterday, that this budget that we're presenting, our budget remains progressive and redistributive and also makes large contribution to transformation and growth. The pressures are there in our public finances, and there are risks, and these risks, we've captured them in the document at the back, and they will require us to make difficult trade-offs and compromises along the way as we approach dealing with the challenges that are posed and the pressures that are posed by these public finance, the pressure that we see. In this MTPS, we also emphasize the point that we are committed to fiscal consolidation. We want to remain within the expenditure ceiling, and we will maintain the expenditure ceiling over the medium-term budget, the medium-term, and that there is a presidential task team led by the president, this task team will develop proposals that will ensure that we restore fiscal sustainability, noting that, and I can talk about it later, noting that, as you know, that our debt is almost hitting 60.8% of GDP. We also believe that the only sustainable solution for our development and the health for our public finances is to grow the economy. So growth remains the center of what we should be doing and focusing ourselves on in making sure that this economy grows. Now, partly, right at the beginning, we are just giving a global outlook in terms of how we characterize the global economy, and we note there that the economy. Global economy continue to improve, but however, South Africa remains...
PDG, we can jump this because we've covered this a lot, unless members feel they want to pursue this. You can always interrupt the chairs, right, because it's just our feeling, but if you disagree, you're welcome to... this we're familiar with, right? Global economy is growing, even sub-Saharan Africa and Africa, and we're against, as the minister said earlier.
I'll go first, yes. And even this slide here, we've said it, there's, falling investment in South Africa, low levels of business confidence characterized by weak domestic demand and heightened risk premium, and investment is going to decline by 3.9% in 2016. Economic forecast, this is important, I think, if you look at the slide, that this MTP is saying our GDP growth or expected economic growth is at 0.7% this year, recovering slowly to reach 1.9% in 2020. Inflation has been revised down, and we're saying that the recovery in growth depends on improved investment outlook and rising exports, and as I said earlier on, just general on growth. Per capita income is falling, as you can see, but high choices are required in order for us to go out of this low growth trap that we find ourselves in. A new cycle of inclusive development requires intervention to stimulate activity, ensure effective regulation, improve competitiveness of manufactured exports, promote localization and reindustrialize the economy, together with renewed attention to the capacity of the state. So this, in a way, is at the center of also things that we need to do in terms of focusing ourselves on the capacity that our SOCs have in order to actually take us out of this low-growth trap. There are some actions that we highlight in the MTPS that will boost confidence. One such is that we have to focus ourselves on restoring our fiscal sustainability, promoting transformation and competitive outcomes in implementing certain key reforms, and we've done that where possible. We want to manage fiscal and economic risk associated with state-owned companies. The Minister of Finance yesterday focused part a bit of his speech on state-owned companies and what we need to be doing there. And we came before in this committee, explained ourselves around recapitalization of SAA. We said we'll appoint a new board. We've done that. New CEO, we've done that. It's also important to create policy certainty by finalizing key legislative and policy processes. And these are low-hanging fruits. We've said that in the past, auctioning spectrum and ensuring that we actually embark on what we've promised ourselves. There is a market inquiry on broadband and data prices. The process of finalizing the post bank is underway, as you know. There has been engagements with the mining sector to ensure that there's stability in the sector so that the sector can begin to do what it's doing best in creating jobs and boosting our economy, and also various stakeholder engagements around the regulation and agricultural land holding bill. That's also important, and Minister Nkwinde, as we indicated yesterday, is busy with those consultations. The fiscal outlook, as reflected here, is that, as I said earlier, that fiscal consolidation remains at the cornerstone of what we want to do. And it's important that we continue to reduce spending where possible, and also where if need be, obviously open ourselves to possibilities of increasing taxes if we have to. And this is all reflected in the primary deficit, as the numbers shows. But however, it's important also to know that our options available at this point in time are very limited, given that per capita income is falling, as I showed in the earlier slide, and also the impact, economic impact of further expenditure tax cuts or tax hikes could be counterproductive. So all we're saying is that we've got options both on the expenditure side and the revenue side, but we should also know that in doing this, it could be counterproductive. Slide 8. Now, in terms of the fiscal framework that you presented yesterday, the budget deficit is set to increase to 4.3% of GDP compared to the 2017 budget in February, where we estimated it at 3.17%. And we also know that without action, national debt will continue to rise, and that we will see in a slide to come that it will reach over 60%, as I said. We indicated again yesterday that there are key fiscal risks in the period ahead, and the key one here is the revenue shortfalls. In this current year, we estimate the shortfall to be in excess of 50 billion. Compensation budgets, debt service costs are rising as our debt is rising. Funding gaps in infrastructure and social services, and what I said earlier on the state of owned companies, and in particular the financial deterioration of some of the major states. These are of concern to us, and we want to focus ourselves on that. And again, the table show our expenditure estimates, revenue, and the deficit, and the total gross loan that it's hitting 3.4 in the last 2021. National government, as I said, national government debt is set to reach 60.8% in 2021-22. This is concerning to us, and we have to find ways of actually addressing and engaging with it. And in 2018-19, we said GDP, 8% of GDP would amount to 40 billion. That means for us to come on stream, we will need to come up with options of equaling about 40 billion rand in order for us to come on stream and for us to be satisfied and comfortable that our debt to GDP is at levels that we think would be okay. So we'll need to actually have some measures of 40 billion that we can exercise or that we should be exercising at our disposal. Again, we noted yesterday and we presented to the House yesterday that revenue buoyancy has stalled. And we're saying there that revenue buoyancy appears to have run its course. As you can see in there, that revenue growth outpaced GDP between 2011 and 2015, partly as a result of tax policy measures that we've introduced. Growth has slowed, as we all know, because of the level of the economy, in particular in the finance, retail, and telecom sector. And also, revenue has weakened as a result of low bonus payments, moderate wage settlements, job losses, and a slow employment growth. Persistently weak growth and commodity price volatility in the mining sector, subcontraction in imports and stabilization of the rand, and other factors, as one can imagine, can include other issues relating to tax morality, administrative challenges, and other behavioral responses to tax increases. So the key point here is that revenue under collection reflects the slowing economy, which, as I said, is a concern to us, but may also suggest a profound shift in the relationship between economic growth and tax collections in the year ahead. We, as I indicated, we will continue to maintain and to contain expenditure, but there is obviously, as I said, growing pressure as a result of risks that are associated with our public finances. So we need some resolute action to cut wasteful and inefficient spending, and there is a growing danger that most vulnerable citizens will suffer the effects of fiscal consolidation. Now, this graph is very familiar to us, that in the years of plenty, our non-interest expenditure increased, and when the global economic financial crisis meltdown happened in 2008-2009, non-interest spending decreased sharply, as you can see there. Compensation budgets have grown as a result of the fees, addressing the fees issue, and in higher education 2 years ago, we introduced measures to actually ensure that compensation budgets should actually decrease. Unfortunately, departments currently were not able to actually come to the party in terms of cutting compensation budgets. What we are seeing is that compensation budgets have grown and are crowding out space for employment and complementary inputs. Since 2011, government has been forced to restrict employee headcount, growing to accommodate rising salaries. Spending on compensation continues to grow more quickly than nominal GDP. The medium-term expenditure framework provides an overall increase of 7.3% a year to accommodate improvements in the conditions of service, and many departments are already at risk of exceeding this limit, even assuming that personnel numbers do not increase. So as a result, a fair and reasonable compromise between government and state-owned companies is necessary, and we see that it's necessary, and also it should be seen in the public interest. Now, we've got a small table on your left there where we just basically demonstrating compensation budgets as total budgets, as a percentage of total budgets, and the growth that you've seen in 2008-2009 and 2016 and 2017, and the numbers are there, and we've selected some provinces just to show that compensation budgets generally have increased. And interesting enough, you can see where compensation for defense as a total of budget increased from 38.2% in 89 to around 57.3% in 16-17. And again, that is depicted in terms of the graph that I showed there. Spending priorities, debt service cost continues to actually lead in terms of growth over the years at 11%, and followed by 8.2%, and again that table clearly shows. And as the previous discussion around the mandate paper, in looking at these budgets that departments have put together, there was obviously a look in terms of what are the priorities, and because there's no new money coming in, the reprioritization happened within this context of ensuring that these priorities are addressed. And that you can see, if you have to go to individual budget submissions, you'll see that reflected throughout the budget submissions. To offset revenue shortfalls and reduce borrowing, contingency reserve has been pared down to 16 billion over the 3 years. This leaves government with little room to maneuver if risks to the expenditure ceiling materialize. This is an area that we're lifting, and we're just lifting as an area that is of concern. And as we said, the way we approached this budget was that we obviously had to be frank and open and actually show the real case, real situation, and that we are all challenged and faced with. The fastest growing elements, as indicated, especially around non-interest spending, is around learning and culture, where your higher education spending is, and post-school education and training, followed by health and community development at 6.5 and 7.9% respectively. Government will continue to protect the expenditure of service of low-income households, and it is important that we note that as a principle, this medium-term budget policy statement says that low-income households' expenditure will be protected. As I indicated, there's rising debt service costs is the fastest growing category of expenditure in our spending categories at 11%, and this year debt service costs are 163 billion, rising to almost 223 billion in 2021. And as I said, for every rand that we spend 15 cents servicing debt. Containing spending on non-essential is critical. So we've said that the spending ceiling will be maintained, and we've been introducing cost containment measures from 2012-2013, if you can remember. And we're saying that, and we see some benefits of what we introduced, and that table simply indicates the benefits of having embarked on a cost containment drive, and then we see that generally there's been an average annual growth of minus 2.8% around those spending categories, and there's clear changes that the cost containment drive that we embarked on a few years ago has begun to bear fruit. There are, however, risks to the expenditure outlook. State-owned companies persistently demonstrate operational inefficiencies, poor procurement practices, and weak governance, and failure to abide to fiduciary obligations. This is a concern. Minister of Finance highlighted this yesterday. We also see another risk in the form of a new civil service wage agreement that started recently that should be finalized, and in which salary, if salary increases have to exceed CPI inflation and without headcount reductions, this would render the current expenditure limit difficult to achieve. I think that second bullet is also a point that should be noted by this committee, both committees. Additional spending commitments may emerge from policy processes that are underway, in particular discussions around fee-free higher education that essentially addresses training to poor and middle-income students, and other policy commitments that include NHI. These are not tabled, but all we're saying is that these commitments may emerge. There's no decisions as yet to fund these categories that I'm mentioning here, including proposals that are captured in the defense review, early childhood development, if we have to go that route, accelerated rent reform, and other large infrastructure proposals that are currently in the system. If all of these have to emerge, all of these have to be addressed, then this there's a potential that the risk to the this may cause huge risks to the expenditure outlook as we see it. To anchor a sustainable budget, structural increase in expenditure must be matched by structural increases in revenue. If we have to do any of the things that I mentioned, that also must be matched with some form of revenue. The expenditure ceiling can be adjusted to accommodate new spending priorities when a permanent source of revenue is found to offset increases as stated in the 2015 MTVPS. Now, that's a stance that we took some time ago, and it informs how this MTVPS is structured, that if there's a change in spending, there must be a matching source of revenue that needs to be identified as a principle, and because of the limited and growth of the economy that is unrealistic that we see right now. In terms of division of revenue, also what the MTVPS does is to give indicative numbers around the division of revenue, 47.6% of available non-interest spending to national departments, 43.2% to provinces, and 9.2% to local government, and the numbers are indicated in the slide. It is important that we change course. It's not changing course in terms of, it's changing course in the way we view ourselves, in the way we have to do things, and we think it's critical that we must know that decisive action is needed for a new growth trajectory. Interventions are needed to improve the competitiveness of manufactured exports, promote localization and reindustrialize the economy, something that we need to do. I mentioned something about the importance of spectrum auctioning, optimizing government portfolio and actually understanding what we have, and if possible, including other both tangible and non-tangible assets, by the way. Reform the governance of state-owned companies, the minister mentioned yesterday, as I said, encourage private sector participation where possible. We did mention that as a start, we will obviously have to look at SAA once it's stabilized, so that we can then go through an open process to actually seek a private sector participant. to partner with SAA. A stronger package of measures to stimulate the economic growth is being developed and looked into, because we believe that there's low-hanging fruit that you must just pick in order for us to be able to get out of the conundrum that we have. A team of ministers reporting direct to the president has been established to develop proposals to narrow the deficit, stimulate the economy, and build investor confidence. Work is underway in ensuring that this happens. The committee met at least 3 times already, and it's important that as we move into the 2018 budget, that we come up with firm proposals that will help ensure. Chair, I'm almost done. The team will work to ensure that the spending ceiling remains intact this year and consider...
Oh, very much for him, very much, because he succeeded 18 minutes.
Yeah. Yes. And additional resources... Chair, I also want to be a member one day. The team will work to ensure that spending remains intact this year and that we don't err on the side of ensuring that the spending ceiling is maintained. Additional resources and measures to reduce expenditure, we need to embark on those, ensure that we raise revenue and improve the impact of public resources on economic growth, as announced in the 2018 budget. So the work that this team is going to be doing is going to be much more focused on ensuring that whatever package we come through in the 2018 budget is takes into account that we have to reduce debt, take into account that if there's any new spending items that must be additional revenue sources, or there must be revenue that is matched with these new spending priorities, if at all they have to. But as it is, Chair, that's basically the MTBPS, and the document is in front of us, and the team is here, and we should be able to take questions. Thank you, Chair.
We had to allow him latitude, right? Because the 3 chairs here have instructed the ANC to read every page of the documents. That's why they're all looking very bleary-eyed here. We did it for the DA, because they need to catch up, okay? So thank you very much. I hope the DA has benefited. I won't ask many questions, because he was very comprehensive. But Mr. Mania being Mr. Mania, he put his hand up. Okay, who's next? Belinda, I forget your name, man. What's your name? From Pumalanga? Isaac, yeah. Isaac and Mr. Sorry? Tablat, sorry. Yeah, and then there's Tandy, Mr. Lees, Pinky, and then a comrade, and Brandon. Yeah. Motla Shipping, yeah. Okay. Well done. Okay, so we've got thousands of people to speak. Each of you has got 30 seconds. Mr. Mania, you've got 10. All right, up to 2 minutes. 3 minutes, okay. Fine, let's go for it. 3 minutes, okay.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is addressed to the Minister. And that's the whole question of the strategy, because, of course, this is the first medium-term budget policy statement that I'm aware of where Treasury did not actually make proposals for an adjustment in the main budget. And the spin that's been put on your medium-term budget policy statement is that this was a frank overview, as you said yourself, that a brave attempt to set out the facts, to confront the executive with the hard decisions which they have to take, and even the subliminal message, the Minister of Finance standing up to the President. That's the spin that's been put on it. But isn't the truth actually that government is now, as the ruling or governing party heads into its Congress, isn't the truth really that government is now paralyzed, and that what National Treasury and you have done have actually to kick the can down the road to delay the hard decisions until January or February next year before the main budget, when you calculate and hope that President Jacob Zuma is no longer the President of South Africa? Is that actually not your strategy? That's the first question. That then brings me to the second question. It appears that what you have done is...
Can you continue making noise while Mr. Mania speaks, please? No, continue making noise. Not encouraging you to make more noise while he speaks. Okay, Mr. Mania, go ahead. Sorry? No. My ruling is, as the chair, continue to make louder noise, but you have your 3 minutes. I can't. I have no choice. That's why I have to give it to you, not because I'm kind to you.
I'll switch to rapid fire. This then brings me to my second question. Is your strategy has been to kick the can down the road, delay the hard decisions till next year, and the decisions appear to be taken by a new and mysterious presidential committee. I wonder if you could tell us exactly who serves on the new presidential committee, which you referred to in page 20 of your book and page 19 of your presentation. Then on to policy. Do you accept that your analysis is flawed? What you said in your speech was that the fundamental problem and the biggest challenge is the implementation of economic policy. Don't you think that it's now time to confront the fact that the problem is the economic policy itself, and what you require is a fundamental shift in economic policy in order to boost economic growth and create jobs in South Africa? Then on the question of fiscal policy, if you read the medium-term budget policy statement, it's now no longer clear to me what is National Treasury's fiscal policy. Historically, your fiscal policy was focused on stabilizing national debt, and the metric that you focused on, of course, was the main budget primary surplus. Does that remain your fiscal policy? Second last question on wasteful expenditure. Now, this brings me to preparation. I'm not sure that Tundi and her colleagues have read every line in the AENE, but I have. And a close scrutiny of the budget reveals, and these are small numbers, that when it comes to wasteful expenditure, that there are, I think, at least four ministers who have purchased new ministerial vehicles at a cost of about 6.2 or 6.5 million rand. Now, this is not, it's not
a huge amount of money. 3 minutes, 40 seconds. But I'll allow you, because to be fair to Mr. Mania, whatever else, he does actually use his time. He doesn't use his full time. Like earlier, he used 1 minute, 20 seconds. So I'll give you another 45 seconds to be fair to you. No, not you, certainly.
What symbolizes is government's inability to contain costs. And in fact, if you look at your own presentation, 3 years of cost containment measures and huffing and puffing have saved, 2.1 billion rand. Cost containment measures have failed. In your own AME, you have cabinet colleagues wasting money on ministerial vehicles. Is it not time to consider the opposition's proposal to implement a full-scale, comprehensive spending review to identify areas where government can save over the medium term? And finally, in 1 second, is nuclear affordable or isn't it? Could you clarify your statements? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who's next? Belinda.
Thank you, Chair. I must say it's the first time I've been in a committee where the Chair answers the questions on behalf of the ANC ministers. Anyway,
you must have a sense of humour, Belinda. You'll have to live with me. I'm not apologising.
You didn't do it out of humour. You did it because you thought maybe the minister couldn't answer.
Oh, please.
Okay. Minister and DG.
Do it differently. Yeah. You'll have to live with
say
it.
Say you want to create policy certainty. That's one of the big themes of your presentation. Now, today UCT was closed down for the next few days. CPUT has been closed down. The University of the Free State has 7 students in jail. This is a major area of policy uncertainty and huge risk. As you yourself have said, it's a high-risk area. So have you actually seen the Hayer report, which I believe is over 700 pages long, and maybe this is why President Zuma hasn't released it. Have you seen it? And if so, what do you expect its financial implications to be? Do you expect it to be proposing that the 10 or 11 billion rand per year, increasing at 8 and 10% a year because higher education inflation is higher than normal inflation, do you expect that amount of money to be recommended by the Commission? And if so, where would you find that money? What revenue source, as you put it, would you use in order to fund free higher education? Thank you.
It's your time. We'll remember that. If ever you come back, who's next? Yeah.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. I trust you'll cut me some slack in the time. Chairperson, yeah,
I couldn't remember your name. Yeah, go ahead.
Good. All right, cool. Chairperson, I'm reacting, and I've been writing as fast as I could go on the presentation, and then jerked my memory on slides 7 and 8. Now, I recall just after the budget by the previous minister, Pravin Gordhan, last year, February, I remember from National Treasury, Ismail Momo giving us a presentation in the Joint Committee specifically on the Tax Amendment Bill. And you went on to detail what is motivating the amendment in the Tax Amendment Bill. And that then jerked my memory back to when the minister, the previous minister, Pravin Gordhan, announced a tax shortfall of about 30-odd billion rand. I think it was February, some 8 months ago. That resulted, of course, in the commissioner, I think it was Tom Moyane, Duduzani's uncle, I think it was. He called a press conference and highly disputed this, minister. And then, obviously, there was a huge issue between him and the minister. And now you have just gone on to announce a some 50 billion rand tax shortfall. So this then now leads me, and I've been writing and scribbling, is this not some wholesale underperformance by the Commissioner of SARS? How do you see that? What minister then are you going to do personally about this in your reign regarding this debacle that's been carrying on? And of course, then, what are your thoughts on us having failed poor South Africans in terms of these monies that were really targeted for redistribution? And then two more questions, Chairperson. In your personal opinion, Minister, is SARS right now performing under Mr. Moyane's leadership? And then finally, I want to go on to say, or ask you, in your personal opinion, I'm not sure what miracle you're looking for in the next 4 months when you come up with the February budget. But is this country's sovereignty not coming at stake or really at stake in the next 6 months or so? Yeah, Chairperson, thanks.
You didn't use up your 3 minutes, by the way. Very good, very good.
Chairperson, thank you. Like yesterday, I'm largely covered by my colleagues again. Only got two very short questions. The one is the minister mentioned quite a few times yesterday about growing the economy, and he touched on that again this afternoon. And my question is, you know, obviously there's a lot of doom and gloom in the whole budget speech that we had yesterday, but there is no incentive of how the economy is going to grow. Apparently it's left now to the ministers that must look into that. In the meantime, you know, the currency nosedived, and I mean, you know, that is going to affect the economy even more. My question is whether the minister would agree that he missed a golden opportunity just to give a little glimmer of hope to allow the people maybe to start doing something. That is my first question, Chairperson. Secondly, you know, we have heard quite a bit about fiscal consolidation. You know, and really, what is happening in practice, you know, apparently that is a big drive to also consolidate the fiscal situation. But in practice, we are moving in the opposite direction. And I was just wondering whether, you know, somebody, maybe the DG, can explain that to us. Doing one thing or saying one thing and doing something else. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, who's next? Tandi.
Before I ask my question, Minister, I looked at the faces sitting this side, and none of the people who are sitting this side had an experience to run a budget in a democratic state. So don't be worried. And I'm going to illustrate what I'm talking about. I'm going to illustrate what I'm talking about. The budget size in 1985 and the budget size in 2015 was not the same. So those who ran an apartheid state did not allocate the same amount of budget that were allocated to them. I'm not talking to you, Professor, I'll come to you. Secondly, if you look at the population size then and the population size now, it was totally different. If you look at what the black townships were allocated for, it was allocated almost nothing, zilch. So nobody in this room can speak with authority in terms of experience. Let me go to the issues. Therefore, By so saying, I envy. I'm talking about facts. Nobody can argue those facts. There was no allocation in education, so she can't even speak about her hair. There was nothing given to black schools. But I'm saying, I'm not using that as an excuse. These are the issues that I want to raise. Firstly, Minister, there's a diminishing returns in relation to capital stock. That's a fact. And given the fiscal risk statement as presented in 2016, and you look at it in the current conjuncture, continuously in your speech yesterday and what the DG has raised today, you said we need to find alternative revenue funding, right? You might want to have a policy statement released that says how you're going to go about that, because you are in a mode where you're dealing with investor confidence. So you might want to expand into how you're going to get into this. But the other thing that will come immediately after that will be your tax bracket. There will be those who expect you to make announcements that as the tax bracket stands in the current conjuncture, will want to effect changes and probably, and I'm not making suggestions, I can't do policy propositions from where I'm sitting. There'll be those that says the CIT as it stands, what will be the changes that you will want to effect? When you look at other issues, out of the three fiscal risks that we have spoken to, DG, one thing that we are not overemphasizing is the underspending in infrastructure spend. And this is an issue that we might want, Minister, through a policy statement to say something to the effect of dealing with this. Also, the
Charlie,
other...
you 4 seconds over time. Can you round up, please?
Just two round up. I'm two left. In terms of the yields that you can get from the HPL, because maybe I missed it when you said it. I didn't capture you very well in terms of the HPL and the yields that we're going to get from the voluntary disclosure program getting into the next fiscal year. So it's my humble plea to deal with that. And also the compensation of the CEOs. Maybe there's something that we can say that can, you know, give a comforting message in relation to how we deal with issues of compensation generally in the public service, and especially when we deal with compensation of CEOs in the state-owned enterprise. The last one, Chair, as we kickstart inclusive growth, we need to be saying something about what's going to be the structure of our stimulus package so that people understand how we implement it without creating this atmosphere that might be creating a jittery in terms of understanding the policy framework that you go into. And the rest, Minister, had nothing to do with the MTV press, but was just political statement by people who are...
Funny enough now, because you've taken Oki's time as it is, right? Oki, thank you for giving your time.
No, thanks.
Who's next? Okay, comrade.
No, thanks, Chair. Tandy, maybe I'm going to make political statements too. But, Comrade Minister, I must welcome your budget speech. It was really encouraging. It was encouraging because this is not a South African economic situation. The recession is not a South African recession. It's a world recession. Even the so-called big economies at some point suffered setbacks. You would remember when Roosevelt came with the New Deal, it was to address the socio-economic issue, conditions that were confronting the Americans at a particular time. And therefore, we welcome that in your budget, Minister, amongst other things, you spoke of the Youth Employment Service, you spoke about spending in the social programs, where you increased the amount from 77 billion to 97, it needs to be applauded. Having said that, Minister, I said I will make just general comments and broad comments. I think looking into the conditions of our visitors as is now, is it not maybe perhaps the right time that we relook into the SACU agreement? Two, if we want to change the socio-economic conditions and the wealth status in this country, where you said yesterday in your speech, 95% of the wealth in this country is owned by the minority and only 5% of the wealth by the majority. It's a worrying statement. And therefore, my view is that, you know, the issue of land, if you go to the area where I come from in the Northwest, everywhere, people have turned arable land into mining land, everywhere. And perhaps it's important that we expedite as the ruling party the issue of the redistribution of land to its rightful owners. And perhaps the economic conditions in this country would change immediately. We need to look at the corruption, the real corruption that is there in this country. The illicit outflow. No, that is the greatest corruption that is taking place in this country. And those people must be arrested, like people who shout 10 rand that we are making noise about, and we are quiet about this one. And we are encouraged that SARS is dealing with it, and that must be expedited.
My brother, you have 3 minutes, but you can have a bit of latitude.
No, no, thank you. I've made my political statement.
It's me. Chair.
Oh, is it Pinky? Okay, then Mr. Lees. Okay, Pinky and then Mr. Lees. Not that it matters in what order, but anyway. Pinky?
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
I think I want to welcome the minister's frankness in terms of what he has presented yesterday and indicating the difficult conditions that we find ourselves in. And I think, Chair, I really want to support his stance on the SOCs, that they are going to be very close to making sure that it's no longer business as usual. Because one of the things that really was a problem was how government is able to act swiftly on some of these things and timeously, so that we don't drag things for a long time. So I think if we can, as the department and government and his colleagues, if they can really stick to what they are saying they will do, it will be better for us, including the interventions that have been done on SAA and ESCOM. There's a focused approach that was presented to us on the mandate paper. All we need, Minister, and we're appealing for its implementation. Because it's nice to come with some of these things, but whether at the end departments are able to implement, it's another thing. But the other thing that I want to appeal to you, Minister, and your colleagues, is that you leave the public to speculate for too long on issues and come after the fact in clarifying certain things. The PIC is an issue at point. For now, there's an issue around SASA and Postbank. These kind of things really leave people with uncertainty, and we need to come closer to the situation and clarify and act and make sure that whether it's a license thing, we know it's not your terrain, it's subs terrain, but let's see some of these things moving and making sure that really going forward, because I come from a constituency where most of my people are, or the people that I represent are indigent and rely on some of these things. Even the party that I come from, predominantly rural, and they will rely on social grants and other things. So we need to really look at and make sure that things happen. The last issue, Chair, I hear the minister, a worrying factor, that the debt is escalating, fine. But I thought, at some point we must be told, is the BRICS Bank and the DBSA really going to assist us to deal with infrastructure rollout? DBSA is doing very well in...
You're at 3 minutes, but fine.
Yeah, in Africa and other areas. Can we then start to see them assisting our municipalities and other things and dealing with infrastructure rollout in rural areas? Thank you, Chair.
Next, Mr. Leese, yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you to, I'm not sure, DG or Minister, but just some clarity on the expenditure ceiling breach and the sale of Telkom shares, because what's said in the MTBPS document is slightly different from the speech. And the one it says it's maybe, the other one says it's definite. But what is the value of those shares that are going to be sold? Is it the 3.9 billion that's referred to, I think, on page 19 or 20 of the possible breach or the probable breach? And who is going to buy these shares in a way that you can go and buy them back again? Is there an arrangement to sell them to someone on that basis? It does seem a little strange that someone would be prepared to buy the shares and then sell them back to you at a later stage. So at what price will they be bought back at that later stage? Then I'm interested to hear about the plans for private equity for SAA. The airline is bankrupt. It owes another 15 billion to banks. This whole concept of a private equity partner under these conditions seems to be somewhat remote. So, Minister, would you just reassure us that there won't be some kind of fake privatization using the PIC to meet that private equity partner kind of commitment, when it isn't really in the real sense a commercial private equity partner, Minister? And given that, I mean, the classic one is that SAA doesn't even fly between Durban and Cape Town. And your very strong statements yesterday that this is such an important entity to have this national airline. What are the real reasons why you want to cling to this entity that has cost the poor of South Africa tens of billions of rand? Why is it that it's so important to keep it? With regard to the loans that have now been rolled over until the end of October and perhaps longer if other conditions are met, what's happened to the interest rates now payable on those? Normally when you have a government guarantee and you go and borrow money, you get the money at quite good rates. Have those rates, those good, better rates, carried through to the
one you exceeded by 26 seconds, but go ahead, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate your whatever the word is. Well, I would never say that, Mr. Chairman. So have those rates been maintained with the rollovers? And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, is Dudu Mjeni still the chair lady of SAA as we speak today?
Yeah, we get everyday surprises, also questions. Honourable Minister, thank you, and we appreciate your presentation and the position you took yesterday, 2 o'clock, regarding the finances of South Africa. I think it's very clear to us, but that we reiterate the action plan needed to ignite economic growth. Is that the 14-point plan that was announced on the 13th of July? That was the first time it was made public. Secondly, Minister Ndiji, the action plan to improve the capacity of SARS to collect revenue. I think that is very, very crucial. What is the action plan? And that's the way we have to move into the action plans. Lastly, the whole question of Postbank. Honourable Minister, we as the Finance Committees are waiting for the bill to be tabled in Parliament that we can put that through the parliamentary process. Finally, cutting on expenditure, cutting on travelling and accommodation cost. And now I speak for my province, Northern Cape, that we take the route of video conferencing. It's 804 kilometers to travel from Springbok to Kimberley. It takes you a day to get there. It takes you a day to get back. Spending 4 hours in a meeting, plus accommodation, etc., which can be saved in terms of money. When these staff members are sitting in their regional offices, having the IT and all the equipment, if we can put a man on the moon, I think we can do this. It might be a little number, a small number in terms of savings, but if every province is going to do that, it will be interesting to look at that picture. So I'm just putting this also on the table, Minister. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Very quickly, Minister, the first thing is I was very struck by your, let me quote what you said, needless to say you remember, you said yesterday that procrastination and dithering must end. We must demonstrate decisive leadership. And then you go on to say government must improve its productivity and decisiveness. Elsewhere you talk about procrastination. I really think, Minister, you've hit the ball, what, hit the nail on the head is the expression, right? So we will also hold you to account. I really think, you know, it's said in a million different ways, in a million different times, in a million different years. That's exactly it. It applies as much to parliamentarians in some respects, Minister, as it applies to members of the executive. So I really want to welcome that. I know you don't speak for government as a whole because you can't hold ministers to account for their dithering, but from your side at least we'd really like decisive action. So the first thing I want to ask in that regard is, I think again on state-owned entities, you were very good yesterday, Minister. But the real test is what happens in action. So you said that if you have to offer bailouts, you're going to have very stringent conditions. Can't we ask that you provide those stringent conditions? Obviously, you have to go through your cabinet processes and consult with Minister in Public Enterprise and whoever else. But can't you bring those stringent conditions into the public domain as soon as possible? It will really help. It will make Parliament feel more at ease, including your own ANC. But it will also make the public, the private sector, the investors all feel calmer. That shareholder management bill, we know that you have no ultimate control over that. It belongs to public enterprises. But Minister, for my sins, I was once chairing public enterprises in this parliament. And Alec Irwin brought the first draft of this bill to us. It's how many years? 10 years later. That is a classic illustration of your procrastination, right? So what we are saying is not yours. You know, we mustn't focus on the executive comrades and colleagues, as I say, without us looking at ourselves. We pass this shopping list of recommendations. How many do we actually oversee, implement, right? How many of us go in our constituency offices and carry forward that? So, Minister, my view is politicians generally, and in this committee, as well as the executive, are all equally, well, more or less equally responsible for that. Minister, I also want to say that on in illicit financial flows, we have it on our report. It's been looming, well, it's been there for 18 months with your predecessor. We said this thing affects several ministries and departments. We said, please, we cannot prescribe to you, but consider approaching the president to set up an interministerial committee. The figures are horrific, Minister. We don't have to cover the ground. You know them, right? Horrific. Now, more than ever, we need that money. So I will write to you yet again and say, what is progress in this regard? We know the minister doesn't decide, but the president decides on interministerial committees. But now we brought in the SAPS committee. Comrades, you know full well the issue that these seven committees are preoccupied with, and especially the four, is we've bored and fed up, Minister, of dealing with policy, theory, strategy on illicit. What we want is action. It is appalling what is going on, really. The SAPS does not investigate or it's tardy. The National Prosecuting Authority is unable to act because it is the quality of the investigations. So you have to work. Minister, you are ultimately accountable for illicit financial flows, as are two finance committees. We are pleading once again, where's Zakhele? Are you around? Put the thing in the report again. And require now a deadline. The minister must reply to us on progress in this regard within 30 days. But we really want something done. You can't do it on your own. Finance cannot do it on their own. We need action. We need people in jail, Minister. That's what we said last time. We want them in jail, if possible, before December 25th. Right? Then all the negative things said about you will dissipate. You will set a legacy of a sort that this committee, at least the finance committees, will really value. Then very quickly, the Parliamentary Budget Office Minister said yesterday, I didn't know these things. Minister, I'm also learning, just like you are, 24 months later. They spoke about a thing called effective tax rate and statutory tax rate. Is that the word, Dumasani? Right, I got it right. And they're saying, although the statutory tax rate for CIT, corporate taxes, is 28%, in effect they pay 9%. Partly because government does give them like concessions, but partly because they may be very clever in their bookkeeping and accounting. Now, if the CIT, if the corporate tax is 9%, they give us a table. We can forward it to your tax people, Momo and others. They said that on the G20 scale, we're about 13 highest. We're nowhere near the highest. Is that right, Tumasari? Good. Okay. So maybe they've got it wrong. If so, you can flay them. But for now, we take what they're saying is correct. We would like some response to that at some stage, not now. Then I'll drop the other issues, except to say that there's too many issues here, and I'm running out of time. So I'll forego this. But there is something I want to raise. Now, I'm not speaking as a member of parliament, as a chair. And I want to say this thing. I've said it a million times. It applies as much to me and the chair here as to everybody. You see, members, we have to ask ourselves. For example, with the greatest of respect to Mr. Lees. By the way, Mr. Lees raised something that I was niggled about, and now it's making a lot of sense to me. He said, who would want to buy, Minister? I thought about this thing, but, you know, he's more technically competent than I am. And he put it rightly. He said, on what circumstances would somebody buy a section of the shares government owns in Telkom, and then you buy it back? I was wondering about that. But he said a more interesting question than what I said, which is, what would you pay for it and so on? I suppose you can't give an answer, but is this done and does it bear relevance to the situation? Now, the next and final question I wanted to ask is, I want to make a point, and this is not part of my time. You see, colleagues, you see, let me ask Mr. Lees, what answer are you going to get from the minister that you don't already know? Why don't you sell SA? He dealt with it in his speech. He dealt with it over radio. He dealt with it on TV. I mean, what is he going to say now that he hasn't already said? So why don't we, instead of Belinda having this crude theory, I don't think she's serious, I'm protecting a minister, why would I do that? the minister's half my age. I'm on my way out, right? So, I mean, really, where am I aspiring to be Minister of Communications again, or Deputy Minister of COFTA? So, Belinda, pipe down. Let me tell you. Let me tell you, Mr. Lees, shouldn't you, like Imam there, propose something besides bland privatization? You know the ANC will never agree to say, we would like privatization, but given that you won't do it as the ANC, these are six ways in which you can bring the private sector participation in. Equity ownership, managerial expertise, you could come up with four more. I'm not as good as you are. So I would like to tell members to stick with their policies, but don't ask the same questions over and over again. Make proposals. Like Imam is right to say, no consequences. Why can't Parliament say we want four things done? We are Parliament, right, Imam? Where's Imam? There's he on the other end. Oh, he's gone. Yeah, the TV's gone, so he's gone. Okay, fine. But the thing is, no consequences, right? No consequences. Now, Parliament can't ask the minister. Parliament must say, we want the five things done, go to the Public Service Committee and tell them, hey, guys, do it. So can we please offer concrete proposals apart from asking questions? Thank you. That will apply as much to the chair as it applies to everybody else. Thank you very much. Over to you, Minister.
Mr. Chairman, you
must know, when we say everybody gets an average of 3 minutes, there's a thing called Tandy time. You haven't come across
it. I'm into Tandy time now, Mr. Chairman. I'm into Tandy time. Okay. I would have thought you would see through my question that it's indicative that perhaps what's already been said isn't a real reason.
Oh, I see. But I would like to know what the real reason. Why are you scared? It's an open democratic parliament, right? Okay, fine. At one question, Tandy, only. No, Brandon must speak. He never speaks. Well, when he does, he speaks sense, unlike me. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually do need a little bit of indulgence. And I think we always criticize, we never ever say anything positive. But when you've got 3 minutes, it's very difficult to speak about what you agree on. So I'm going to just a quick question for the DG. Page, Roman numeral 4, the major summary. Part of the deficit has been offset by a recovery of $3 million from national government underspending and local government repayments. Now, we think we know what that is, but can you clarify what it is, and why isn't there any provincial government underspend identified, and why has it not been set off against the appropriations above? You know, if you think we're going to be getting underspending in these departments, why not just have a lower appropriation adjustment amount? Why is it separately disclosed like that? I didn't understand that. Then something we all agree on is the state-owned entities is a big problem. And the question is raised about the tax buoyancy. And the only thing that comes to my mind, the picture in my head is this little goose that lays the golden eggs that's basically started to die. And then I realize it hasn't died. Fortunately, it's only in hospital with anorexia. When you've got anorexia, you don't fall pregnant and you don't have babies and you don't lay golden eggs. And the reason for this is, I think we've got to at least acknowledge it, is the consequence of the gung-ho political and fiscal decisions of a number of years. We don't realize there are consequences. Now, just like Isaac Newton came up with the laws of gravity, we need to understand in South Africa we are not special. All right? There are international laws of money and the flow of money and how business works, etc. And we've got to be very careful of some of the decisions we've taken. And what the minister correctly identified in his speech was certain the reasons why we are not getting foreign direct investment and why we're not getting private investment in the country. But he did leave off one very important one, and that is certainty of capital. Nobody invests money and nobody loans money to anybody if there's any risk of a capital not being repaid. And part of our problem here is we have radical minority groups that say stupid things, and as a government specifically, we're not reacting strong enough to assure, for instance, foreign owners of banks, etc., that they're not going to have their shares expropriated, etc. So we've got to look at that type of our response to some of the radical statements made out there to give investors political certainty, as well as certainty that their money is not going to disappear. My big issue that I would like us to consider is we realize that 11% of our budget is going to be, in future, is going to be taken up by repayment of debt. What are we going to do about this? If we were a stock exchange-listed company, we'd have a few things to do. Firstly, we'd probably sell off our subsidiaries that are underperforming, or we'll make another plan. And I'm not saying we should do that. But we've got to have some committee, and this is what I'm going to ask the minister, and some advisory group within the Treasury, that's come up with ideas as to reduce the government debt. There's got to be some non-strategic assets that we can identify. There's no balance sheet. That's the problem with economists. We never have a balance sheet for us accountants to examine and to come up with ideas. There must be some assets we can dispose of that aren't giving us a return equal to what we are paying in interest, you know, plus the premium. So maybe we can ask the minister just to have some work group on how we can pay off this debt. Because the only other way is to grow the economy, and we've got certain problems in that regard. Yes, we'll grow the economy. Two, we're going to pay off the debt somehow, and three, we're going to try and refinance the debt at lower interest rate. Obviously, it's very difficult when your debt rating is continuing to fall. And lastly, on that issue, let's also consider that if we were a business, we might not automatically get funding. So in our case, we at the moment are able to fund this $220 billion deficit. But it's a continued deficit for the next number of years. At some point, and countries do reach this point, you don't get funding. So we can't just accept that we're going to get funding for our deficit going on in the future. Last thing, just quickly on SARS, there's a lot more to this $50 billion under collection. It's partly the economy, partly, what's the word used, weak moral tax, whatever. But we can't forget, and I think I'm also thinking as a forensic accountant, I use the term rolling. And the ombudsman came up with findings that were not very favorable for SARS. There was some form of rolling of payment or collections, and I think it may be caught up to an extent here. All I'm asking the minister to consider is some form of performance appraisal for senior SARS officials. In, you know, have they been reporting honestly and truthfully to Treasury, etc., and to Parliament and to the people, and are they actually doing the job as efficiently as we who are accustomed to SARS? We had one of the best SARS, shall we call it, departments in the world, and that I'm not so certain anymore if that is the case. So can we just ask the minister to maybe take that into consideration? And thank you for the extra time.
Tandy, and then Mr. Mania.
Yes, Chair, I forgot a question that related to company taxes. It has been picked up that small firms are actually paying more as opposed to bigger firms. So I would want to hear how... I'm happy, Chair. You know, when you're happy, I'm very happy, Chair. When you're happy, I'm happy. Because I cause trouble all the time. So if the minister maybe can give us highlights if there's any changes to how the structure of corporate tax in relation to big firms vis-a-vis small firms is going to be structured like that.
Mr. Mayor?
Thanks, Chair. Just quickly, I omitted a question. I mean, everybody knows that the next hurdle is the next rating cycle, which is on the 24th of November this year. The ratings reviews are already starting to come out, and they're unfavorable. But I wonder if the Minister could outline his plan for dealing with the ratings agencies between now and the ratings review on the 24th.
Minister, there's one thing that prompted by what Mr. Topham said. Brandon, we discussed this last week in the BRRR report that we did. We are very concerned that SARS has not presented its annual report. I just checked with Alan right now. He's the oldest, if you like, linked to this committee. Not once has SARS not presented its annual report, and it's very bad. If SARS doesn't do it, if Treasury doesn't do it, it's especially bad. If it's FFC that doesn't do it, and we're calling FFC our colleagues. So really, we don't know what is going on. I then read somewhere, I don't know if it's accurate, Minister, that the AG is being taken to court by SARS. I don't know if that's true. If it is, it's appalling. These matters must be resolved. Why can't SARS deliver its annual report? And as a committee, Minister, we want to tell you that we have the right, Frank Jenkins might tell us if there's any legal, whether they finish their report in time, you from SARS, right? By the two, you're coming here, and you're going to explain to us in detail. We're going to call the Auditor General's office. We're going to put it all in the public domain. I will check with the legal advisors whether we can do that. But we can't have SARS do this. Sort your matters out through a negotiated process, and you have to appear. Secondly, Minister, you seem to be saying that there are administrative problems with SARS. The question is, I don't want you to respond here, but the sense is we don't think the SARS heads, commissioner and so on, really think they think everything can be reduced to the failures of the growth rates. Well, our committee, at least the majority of us,
it's not consistent. We haven't taken a position as the NC study group, so I'm not speaking on behalf of it. But I think we want to be consistent with our committee to feel, at least our study group, that everything can be reduced to the sluggish growth. We think SARS has got some administrative problems. Personally, I think they get a raw deal in the public domain. I think the problems are exaggerated. But on the other hand, there seems to be a nonchalance from the commissioner and others. Everything is fine. Now, the ombudsperson was very diplomatic. But quite frankly, in an unguarded moment, or I don't know what it was, I saw something else, whether it was accurately quoted. He said something much more stern and direct about SARS failures than he said in our committee. And for what I understood it to mean, at the most generous, it is that a significant number of people who complain to him think these VAT returns are being withheld deliberately, even if it's partly an outflow of systematic performance. What do those things in the computer? What software? Software issues. It's not simply that. Now, Minister, it's not politics, as you know, and governance, as you know, it's not about substance. 70%, as I keep saying, perception, 30% substance. So can you please speak to the SARS Commissioner, because he accounts to you, even to the independent. We want them here on the 28th, Alan. Yeah, come what may. Thank you. Good to you, Minister. We've got 22 minutes. We can spill over for a few minutes after 3 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the members of the committee for questions and suggestions. Chair, the government is not paralyzed, and I think one ought not to entertain that perception. Similarly, to suggest, I don't know where that comes from, because it's not ANC policy, that because there is an ANC conference in December, there will therefore be a new president of the country by February. I don't know where that comes from. So I have no reason to respond to it. No, we didn't kick the can down the road. We say in the statement that if we must find new sources of revenue, that for you have a 50.8 billion rand shortfall, we say that the gross national debt is projected to reach 60% of GDP by 2022, and that the national treasury estimates that stabilizing gross debt below 60% would require either spending cuts or tax hikes amounting to 0.8% of GDP, which would amount to about 40 billion rand next year. That you need, therefore, to take drastic decisions. Now, 40 billion rand is not something you can scratch your head and find. You need to do serious consideration of where you are going to cut the spending and how you are going to find new sources of income in a way that is not going to paralyze the economy. In weight, it sounds easy to just say cut spending and generate new revenue to find 40 billion rand, 0.8% of GDP, then is a statement to say. But it's something else when you must now crunch the figures and determine which program must be cut out in order to find this money. And that's why we say that this president's fiscal committee is working on precisely identifying those programs. Because it's not only going to be, I mean, you can't find 40 billion rand even from merely cutting travel cost, accommodation, catering and stuff like that. You need to find, you need to cut big programs. So the fiscal committee is considering those proposals as we speak, and will submit those proposals to the cabinet so that there is a decision which can be announced for the budget of 2018. And so there is no kicking of the can down the road. We say that the you know, many of the things we need to do ultimately, boosting confidence is the easiest and quickest stimulus you can have to inject growth in the economy, and that therefore you need to implement to speed up the pace. I repeated this in the statement yesterday several times. Speed up the pace and scale of structural reforms to boost confidence so that you can unlock investments and get the economy growing, which of course would in return generate the revenues we need going forward. So that work doesn't need to be announced in the budget. It means that the 14 confidence boosting measures, about six of which I referred to yesterday, the agricultural land bill which Minister Ngwindi is working on, the telecommunications auctions, spectrum auction and broadband rollout, the issues of resolving the deadlock in mining, and some of those programs, the reform of the procurement policies as well as SOE reforms, all of those are programs which are there ongoing. But as I was expressing yesterday, quite frankly, and what we were doing in the statement is not only to present the difficult situation the economy is in, but to talk tough to our own selves about a seeming complacency that creates uncertainty at a policy level, the procrastination, the dithering, the lack of decisiveness, which causes us to have policies that carry on, as you, Chair, were alluding to earlier on. So that is what we are saying. But there are difficulties. There are difficulties because if you say, you know, the economy has slowed down, the first quarter contraction hit us hard and effectively forcing us to revise our projections for the year, it would then mean that any further expenditure cuts and any further tax hikes are going to have to be considered very, very seriously. Because you're talking about additional austerity over what you were already doing. And that's why I said earlier in my intro that we have not abandoned the path of fiscal consolidation. It is not, fiscal consolidation in itself is not an economic policy. It's a path you take when your economy has slowed down and you're trying to find the balance between your expenditures and revenue, and you try to get money so that you are able to implement your programs. You don't want to harm your economy by running huge deficits and a huge gross debt, national debt. So we need to take those. There are those tough decisions which we are working on that we are going to take. We will persist with the fiscal consolidation path, but we need to speed up the pace and scale of implementing structural reforms so that the economy can grow beyond what it's growing. And in one of the slides, we say that, I think, where we talk about the fiscal framework, I think it's slide 8, we say that without action, national debt will continue rising, reaching 60% of GDP by 2022. So if nothing changes, if we don't do anything and we just let the situation slide, the problem with that is that if we let the situation slide, there are additional fiscal risks, such as the 5 that are mentioned on that slide, because they can actually be realized. So it's not that, no, if you let the situation slide, all you may have is gross national debt exceeding 60% of GDP. You actually may face additional revenue shortfalls. You may face a compensation budget challenges because you have to enter into a public sector wage negotiations, and all of those other fiscal risks can actualize. So what we are basically saying is that we cannot let the situation slide. We need to make interventions. Some of those interventions are at broader macroeconomic level. Others are at microeconomic level. There are those within our levers. There are those where we need the participation of other partners in order to get action going. Who serves on...
For clarity, are you saying that if we do the many things subjectively we can do, we can avoid reaching that 60% in the outer year ceiling? You're saying that. So
yes.
It's not a foregone thing that it'll be 60%. But if we do all of those things, we can reduce that, we cannot get to that 60%. Is that what you're saying?
It's not a foregone conclusion that we will get there. There are very tough decisions we need to make. And it will require that we take hard decisions at the level of big capital programs. Big capital programs. I'm not only talking about those that are being run by state-owned companies. I'm talking about the ones that are being run by government, because that's the money that we spend. But whatever the decisions we take, and that's the balance we need to make, we must not implement such austerity as would negatively affect demand in the economy and slow the economy further. We want the economy to grow, and the budget is an important lever in that regard. And we need, therefore, to strike the right balance such that whilst we continue to consolidate, but we do it in such a manner that we do not negatively impact growth and demand in the economy. Who serves on the President's Fiscal Committee? It's Ministers Patel, Pando, Kubai, Khadebe, and the Minister of Finance and the Deputy Minister of Finance. They were not appointed on the basis of the positions they occupy, with the exception of the Minister of Finance and the Deputy Minister and the Minister in the Presidency. Others were appointed on the basis of the contribution that they can make in the committee. So those are the... Then it consists of the Deputy President and the President. It's convened and chaired by the President, and in his absence, obviously, the Deputy President. I will just pick a few questions and leave the rest for the team to answer. I think I answered the question about nuclear yesterday and this morning. The cost containment measures, I think it would be wrong to argue that they have failed. They absolutely, I mean, we would be in a far dire situation now had they failed. We must not cite a few instances where there may have been breaches and use that to aggregate that cost containment has failed. we would be in a dire situation. I think the DG in slide 16 does indicate that we have actually done a lot to save, including in the renegotiation and review of some procurement contracts. We have saved quite significant amounts of money, and we believe that we can still do more in the work that we will announce at a later stage. The Hare Commission report is being considered. I indicated yesterday that the proposals, the recommendations of the report are being considered, and we will make an announcement in the course before the end of the year on what options are being preferred, on what the report says and what options are being preferred. And in the State of the Nation address and the budget next year, we are going to make a pronouncement on it. The shortfalls in revenue really owe to the largest degree to the underperformance of the economy. Yes, there are tax administrative challenges, and I think I said that quite clearly yesterday. But in large measure, it's the underperformance of the economy. The statement that we issued yesterday, you know, it depends how you want to view it. You view it as doom and gloom. If somebody says to you, it's raining outside, you can want to be denialist and say that's a very doom and gloom statement because I wanted the sun. The fact is, it's raining. Telling you the fact as it is, opening the books and telling you that here is the situation. We couldn't go and do a comical alley on the nation and tell the nation that things are all fine. And yet they can see that there are difficulties. You have a 50.8 billion rand shortfall, but you say all is okay. Because what you do by lying to yourself is that you then become the first person to believe your own lie and you become complacent. What we were not trying to do is to send the nation into depression, emotional depression. And I think the majority of South Africans have appreciated the fact that the story was told as it is. They were told the story as it is. You want to play tricks and spin yourself because you want to see good headlines and read good stories and reviews of the lies you have told to the nation and to yourself, then go and say all is well. We had a duty and the responsibility to carry and bear the bad news that this team of National Treasury has had to do with aplomb. I admire them for that, for their inability to come to me and lie and to say the stories that are difficult so that we can communicate those stories as they are, which would induce us to take the correct and hard decisions that would turn the economy around. We've got to take those tough decisions, not by lying to ourselves, but by telling the truth as it is. So, sorry for those who hoped that we would say there is a golden opportunity to give a glimmer of hope by lying. We're not going to do that. We won't do it now. We won't do it tomorrow. I agree, Comrade Tandy, that we certainly do need I think the issues of HPLs and voluntary disclosure, we may only know what yields they've provided next year. But I'm sure Randall may want to comment on it. The alternative revenue sources, we also would need to comment on it, as we were saying, in the budget. I think it may be a matter of opinion whether we could have expressed an opinion yesterday and be firm about what are they going to be. But I think what we're trying to do is to say clearly we need new revenue sources if we must address the 0.8 percent that we need in order to change the direction of our gross national debt. The compensation of CEOs, you know, it's always a challenge, because one of the reasons why you have, well, mentioned why you have declining tax revenues is because of the slowing down of the economy. Bonuses are not being paid, people, the taxes are dropping, jobs are being lost, and so on. So the compensation of CEOs of state-owned companies is a debate that we need to finalize, so that we don't keep on raising that flag. Because even among the people who must accept those jobs, you create uncertainty. Should I accept the job at this salary if there is a cloud hanging over whether my income may be cut by government simply because I'm CEO of a state-owned company? What the Department of Public Enterprise had done and Cabinet approved was to benchmark the salaries of CEOs in state-owned companies according to the sizes of the companies, and to keep them in brackets according to those sizes. And that's why I made the statement yesterday that we pay well, we remunerate well in state-owned companies, and therefore we are correct to demand and expect more of the CEOs and other executive managers in our SOEs. We can't continue to pay so well, and yet the return on our investment is more crises, it's bailouts, it's more government guarantees for operational expenditures and wastage. It honestly is wrong. So what we need to do is really to address the governance challenges and ensure.
Can I just seek some clarity from the meeting? We're at 2 minutes past three. I said 5 minutes more, right? Can I suggest that, you see, the DG comes back to us next Friday. Now, that the questions that the DG is going to respond to, and any further questions you want to add, what's today, Thursday? By tomorrow, 2 o'clock, we can add the further questions. So when the DG comes next Friday, the first item will be responding to all the outstanding questions. He can send it to us in written form by next Wednesday, and then next Friday respond to them. Is that okay? So we give the minister a few more minutes, and then we round up. So, Minister, I would say another 3 to 5 minutes, and then we round up. But I think it's not fair that we raise a zillion questions, and then the minister is not given a right of reply. So the problem is on our side. We ask too many questions, maybe, but so we must wait. So let's give you, it's two minutes past three. We round up at 10 past, so you can take 5 to 6 minutes more, Minister. You can also send written replies if you care to.
Thank you. Let me try and therefore gallop. The stimulus package is being proposed. We will address that, and I admit again that we need to say not only what we are going to do, but where the sources of the stimulus package are going to come from, so that there is clarity. I did mention yesterday, and I think that the stimulus package could be both fiscal and non-fiscal. I elaborated yesterday extensively on steps we are taking in the mining area, additional steps in tourism, And I think we in manufacturing and tourism, and I think we will elaborate on that and put the figures in the budget. The BRICS Bank, the DBSA certainly has been asked by the shareholder to increase its municipal infrastructure allocation. The BRICS Bank, we have about $1.5 billion that has been earmarked for infrastructure investments in South Africa, and we are developing a project pipeline. So at the moment, we cannot be certain in what projects those would be, but we are developing a project pipeline that we will submit to the BRICS Bank. And one of the things that the BRICS Bank is considering is local currency funding for infrastructure, which would be beneficial for us because it basically means that the debt we owe, we hold, will be local currency, will be in local currency, and therefore the risks would be much better than if it was foreign currency or dollar denominated. The post bank licensing should be finalized soon. We are working hard with the with the Reserve Bank to finalize it. The mandate paper, I think what Minister Khajebe did not indicate is that from next year we're going to change the cycle of development of the mandate paper. This year we began developing it from July, August. Cabinet has decided that it must happen early in March. Oh, great.
April is your deadline to present it to Cabinet.
Sure. And then the 14 confidence-boosting measures are being implemented, and I think we would be eager, we would be happy to report on progress we are making, because quite a number of them have been implemented, such as the SAA, such as around the Post Bank, such as around the preferential procurement regulations, and a number of others. We would be happy to provide the report in that regard. And the critical action plan to improve SOE performance centers around appointing correct boards. They just center around it. I think the board we've appointed for South African Airways is confidence boosting, well-rounded in terms of skills and experience, and people appreciate that type of board. And I think Eskom must be next in line before the end of November, and they must move swiftly to appoint new executives, CEO, CFO, and other top executives, so that the risks that we face, to which we are exposed as a result of Eskom, are minimized. The stringent conditions, what we will do, Chair, is that we are going to come back with more stringent government guarantee conditions. Because as I was saying yesterday, we cannot be providing government guarantees for operational expenditure. And we need to be able to take hard decisions. The state-owned companies must not think government is just an uncle. You run yourself down, you run to your uncle, you are guaranteed, they guarantee. It's a perverse incentive. Aunties are more stricter. No, at least aunties are more stricter. Uncles, they're not. So we are going to come with those, and I think we will, of course, make them public. Just as we have set strict conditions for SAA, which we will make available in terms of the steps that we are taking. The illicit financial flows, there is work that we are currently doing between the FIC, the Reserve Bank, and SARS. And the biggest challenge has always been getting the other law enforcement agencies to also play their part. We had already said, Brendan, that the private sector will participate. The private sector participation framework has been agreed to. And as I indicated, we are going to start with South African Airways. The issue with South African Airways, I think we can discuss another day. But you know, meeting with the CEO's initiative, they said to us that, Minister, if you wanted to privatize SAA, let alone SEP, just if you want to privatize it, you will have to pay us to buy it. Raise the value of the asset, and the asset can add value to the country. I think an SEP would play a much more important role in bringing on board additional capital and expertise that will make you to raise the value of the asset than if you just decided to sell the asset as it is. The ratings, we have had a discussion with them yesterday and early this morning, and we are meeting with two of them next week. We are engaging with them, with various ministers, the private sector. We are meeting investors as well. So we are engaging with the ratings rather than waiting only on them to assess the statement we made yesterday and they passed their decisions. And I take the proposals around addressing the issues at SARS. I am engaging with those issues as seriously as they ought to be engaged, so that we can deal with the admin issues which have been raised with regards to the revenue service chair. And of course they are coming to the committee. There are challenges with regard to their annual performance, the annual report. They have reported those issues with me and the reasons why they have failed to resolve the issues through discussion, and that's why they then had to seek a solution through a court process. I think it's an issue that we need perhaps as Treasury to engage with the AG, because I think over the last 2 years we have seen an increase in the numbers of departments that take the AG to court, including the department that I used to serve in. And I think we need to find a way of dealing with those issues so that that practice is... But thank you very much, Chair, I think.
So I've agreed on the process. Just one or two quick things. One is this bill, Minister, we want to plead with you. I spoke to Minister Kwela as well, that we want a bill just on the post bank. Don't lumber it with a whole lot of other issues, because then it takes very long to process, and it's long overdue that something be done about the post bank. Secondly, I think something, this is the first tranche of a series of meetings we're going to have. So the committees don't need to come to any conclusion for now. It's just early days. But some of the issues that we need to think about is, I think we welcome, as we did last year, the relationship in growth and transformation, Minister, that you referred to. One of the things that strikes me, though, and I think we will look at it carefully, is you speak about radical economic transformation as benefiting all, and that's correct, all South Africans, but it should add primarily the poor and the disadvantaged, because it's about reducing the inequalities between the lower income and the high income and the different classes. Thirdly, I think, look, I would like members to think about this, because it'll go in some form or another in a report, presumably, that no matter which party we come from, it is extremely challenging to be redistributive when you've got such difficult, challenging economic circumstances. And I think it has to be recognized, Minister, that you've stuck with the social spending. You've allocated 948 billion rands to infrastructure. And I don't know what it all means, but I'm not an expert in this area, but 77 to 97 billion on higher education. The focus on youth should be welcomed. So I'm signaling some of the issues that the majority party would like other parties to mull over. And Zakhele, you can start thinking about what goes in the report. But we will, in fact, have public hearings next week, Tuesday. And we will meet with you again on Friday, your response to the hearings, and then we will draft a report over the weekend because we have a deadline around which we have submitted in terms of the Money Bills Act. So may I take this opportunity before, or you're going to round up, right? Okay. May I take some of your thanking everybody for their cooperation, Minister, DG and Department, and the people who are here from DPME. And finally, for those of you who are new to the committee, can the members of that party inform those committee members who are coming for the first time the norms and procedures of this committee and the collective chemistry that we've torturously arrived at? And let me repeat, the rule is clear. Only ANC people can interject the DA and the EFF. It is not allowed for opposition parties to interject with an ANC member.
Chairman, what are you saying now?
The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, this is Red. Ah, yes.